Hello again and welcome back. 2015 gave us an opportunity to learn a lot more about St. Louis as the city observed its 250th birthday, its semi-quincentennial. We learned about the rich cultural, political, and civic heritage. The history of downtown is brought to new life in the latest book by local historian Nene Harris. It's titled Downtown St. Louis, and documents that history with marvelous historic photographs as well as text. Nene Harris joins me in studio. Nene, so nice to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me
and
here.
Happy New Year to you. What a handsome book you have come up with. Again, you've done it again, another book from Nene.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It was a great joy to work on it, and frankly, I think I've been working on it for half a century, because when I was 13, my parents gave me permission to take the bus downtown on my own, and I'd go downtown on Saturdays and spend all Saturday roaming the streets of downtown. And that was 50 years ago.
Oh, well, let's not get into that part of it. At least you're not going back farther than that. And of course, we could, as you do in the book. I mean, you go back 250 years.
Well, I wanted to look at downtown St. Louis as an evolving neighborhood. And we think of it as great architecture often, but we forget about it as a living, vibrant place. And from its origins, from the origins of this city, it has been this energetic place. And we start with the founding of St. Louis when all of St. Louis was in what is now downtown. There were about 1,200 cattle in downtown St. Louis and 250 horses, and that's where people lived and worked. It was everything.
Of course, the livestock downtown, the trend continued. You have a picture in your book, I think, of a herd of pigs being marched through the downtown area.
Well, that's another thing that we forget is that back at the turn of, even up to the turn of the century and World War I era, cattle and hogs were herded through the streets of downtown St. Louis.
Well, that's an era that we're all glad is over finally. How many photographs do you have in the book? The photographs are marvelous, by the way.
Thank
They're
you.
Just wonderful.
Don Cordy did all the new photographs, and I think he did a wonderful job. Many of the historic photographs are from Missouri Historical Society, and, you know, I haven't counted. We just kept squeezing in more photos.
There must be well over 100.
I would think a couple hundred if we count them all.
What do you think, Nene, differentiates St. Louis as a riverfront town from other places I can think of, Cincinnati, Memphis, for instance? Or are they really different from us?
We are so superior. Oh, come now. How could you ask me this? Our downtown is a fabulous architectural treasure. And we have these signature buildings that are just phenomenal. We have buildings, again, going back to the 1830s with the cathedral and the old courthouse and the Campbell House Museum and the Eugene Field House. And then you get to the late 19th century buildings, and it's just to think we have the Wainwright Building, Louis Sullivan's first skyscraper, and a block away is his third skyscraper. This is incredible. And we mix it up downtown with mid-century modern and postmodern buildings. So it's this like incredible stage for generations of living and work and really for the great sagas in American history. I mean, I'm sure Cincinnati is wonderful, but and Dickens was very impressed by it. He didn't think that St. Louis would ever measure up to Cincinnati.
That's Charles Dickens, by
Charles
the way,
Dickens,
who
yes.
Spent a little time here
yes.
more than a century ago.
He was favorably impressed with St. Louis, and I put in his in the text. I have his description of the building boom going on in the early 1840s. And of what the old French section of downtown was like in the 1840s.
When did the downtown become pretty much as it is today? I mean, we expanded out. We had not the suburbs per se, but we had the gated communities and the streets that developed beyond 12th, for instance, out beyond Jefferson. When did all of that happen?
Well, following the Civil War, we had a huge building boom. And during the next about 40 years, well, really up through World War I, we have the transformation of downtown to a primarily commercial and industrial area. And it really takes the shape then of this huge downtown for a great metropolis that is just thriving with business, and the residences are just on the periphery. At that point, we have what today would seem exotic residential areas around downtown. With on the northern fringe, we have a Polish community. Then there was a Lebanese community on the southern edge of downtown. And Chinatown was at 8th and Market. The descriptions of Chinatown are really exotic.
You know, that was something I wanted to bring up because I've heard about Chinatown. I've been here a long time, but it was long gone. What was the history, briefly, of our Chinatown?
Well, it appears to have originated with railroad workers, because so many Chinese were employed in building the railroads from the West Coast to the center of the continent. And that's its beginnings. But it's a small community, and it stays in the same area of downtown up through the 1960s, the early 1960s. It was known for having lanterns strung across the streets, for being a very colorful place. But it was also clearly a very impoverished community. Mm-hmm. Most of the people in the early 20th century appeared to have worked in laundries all over the city, and then went back to Chinatown for their residences. But it's a very hard community to get a grasp on, because they were very reticent to speak to census takers. Mm-hmm. And that probably was related to the Chinese Exclusion Act, which had forced many of the Chinese workers to go back to China.
Is that what happened? I mean, basically, it just disappeared.
No, it stayed there again till the 60s, and then the area was redeveloped. The community at that point was spreading out and living spread out, just like many of the old ethnic mm-hmm. communities. So the people stayed in the St. Louis area. It's just the community on Market and 8th dwindled.
Yeah. You know, I guess in some sense, it's we're fortunate to have a downtown at all, given that that great fire that 1849, I guess it was. Tell folks about that. I'm not sure that is very well known, what went on there. That was a disaster.
Well, yes. The river boats, the paddle wheelers, were lined up along the levee, nose to the levee. And people don't realize today, steamboats were pretty dangerous. They were pretty hazardous. Fires and explosions were common.
They had to have fires in the boats to make the steam.
That's right.
Yep.
And so a boat that was moored at the north end of the riverfront caught fire. It caught the adjacent boat fire. And that boat broke loose from its moorings and floated downriver, setting one boat after another aflame until 23 boats burned. The fire spread to the riverfront buildings, and eventually 15 blocks of buildings were just ashes.
It's like the entire riverfront.
And you look at the energy of this town that they rebuilt so quickly. Mm-hmm. That it's really inspirational how quickly this city rebuilt.
Did they rebuild better? I mean, was it a bigger and better riverfront as a result of this tragedy?
Yes. Now, what was kind of just good fortune was the southern end of the riverfront had been spared with some of the earlier houses. So they have been documented, even though we've lost them since then. They have been documented of what the really early houses were like. But the rest of the riverfront, it was rebuilt with this new technology of the 1850s with wonderful warehouses that had cast iron facades, mm-hmm. ornamental cast iron facades. Like, we still have a wonderful example with the Raider building in Laclede's Landing. Mm-hmm. So they were much bigger. They were mostly brick, and they were built right at the sidewalk's edge with big wide doors so the wagons could back right up to them, and the doorways were the same width as the backside of a wagon.
Didn't we lose a number of those cast iron buildings with the development of the arch grounds? We've talked about how many, 40 blocks, I think, were lost.
And about 500 buildings.
Yeah, and many of them were very historic in nature.
Oh, they were fabulous. Now you're going to make me want to cry. But
No.
They were so exquisite. But it's one of the very rare times in history where we lost something great and replaced it with something great. Mm-hmm. And the Gateway Arch is just this phenomenal sculpture. It's incredible. And it's so instantly recognizable to people from all over the world. It makes our skyline one of a kind. People everywhere know St. Louis.
I want to invite listeners to get into the conversation at 382-8255. And we have Elliot calling from Pagedale who wants to talk to Nene Harris. So let's bring him in. Elliot, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. Two quick questions. First, there's a story that I've heard that the Mother's Fish building on Olive, on Locust, I apologize, is actually under the stucco and one of the oldest buildings in St. Louis. And does she know the truth of that? And also, does she know what really happened to the old rock house? And I'll take my answers off the air.
Well, pieces of the rock house are in the hands of the National Park Service, and they reconstructed a corner of the rock house in the old courthouse.
Just before you continue, what is the rock house? Folks might not know what that's all about.
Well, it was a warehouse built by Manuelisa in 1818, and it was a warehouse used, a small warehouse by today's standards, that was built of stone, and it was used for the fur trade business. It was the oldest surviving building on the riverfront, and it was preserved when everything else was torn down to make way for the Gateway Arch. They reconstructed it before the arch was built. For the building of the arch, they had to dismantle it again, and it was never fully reconstructed, mm-hmm. but a corner of it was reconstructed again within the old courthouse.
So that's all that's preserved of the rock house.
Uh-huh.
And he had mentioned another building, the Mother's House, was that?
And I don't know which building he's referring to. Yeah. Did he say on Olive?
I think he said Locust.
Locust.
I think he said Olive at first and then Locust.
On Locust.
Yeah.
And you know, many of these
Mother's
buildings.
Fish House.
Because so many buildings go through a variety of names depending on even what half century you're talking about. So I'm not quite sure. If he can give us an address, that'd be great. Or call afterwards and let me know, because I want to look that up.
There's another book coming from Nene Harris. I know it's called Mother's Fish House.
You got it, if it has that good a story.
Let's take another call. David is joining us from Soulard. David, go ahead. You're on the air. David?
Oh, yes. Hello. Gosh, that was fast. and I apologize. I just have been listening with fascination to the last 5 minutes of your program. Brian Stevenson, you may have already addressed this, but Brian Stevenson, who's a great civil rights lawyer, has proposed in a letter to the New York Times that within the last 7 months that monuments should be erected to designate the sites of lynching. And I'm thinking in particular of the area downtown, actually, where the city garden is, which was the site, according to what I've read in the old courthouse museum, of the McIntosh lynching, which really triggered Elijah Lovejoy to move to Alton because the St. Louis media wanted to quiet down that incident. And I think, given St. Louis's role in this remarkable time in making people face what has been sort of blinked away, amazingly, in terms of the oppression of our Black community, that it would be very important to address this proposal by Stevenson. And I'm just curious what your views of this are.
Are you familiar with any of that particular history?
Well, the story of the lynching, and it was horrendous. But I really have to credit our National Park Service in doing an exceptional job of relating clearly and thoughtfully and with great sensitivity the story of African Americans and slavery in this area. They have done great work. And as you mentioned, or the caller mentioned, he read about it in the old courthouse. Mm-hmm. And they do such an extraordinary job. I believe we should commemorate all different facets of our history. I'm not sure any of us could do a better job than they have done, though. And clearly, they did an extraordinary job because they touched this man so much with that, you know. And they are great exhibits. So in the courthouse, and many St. Louisans, David's the exception, so many St. Louisans don't visit the exhibits in our old courthouse.
And it's going to be fun to visit the new museum at the Arch when that finally opens. By the way, we had a tweet from Rebecca who says, I think the caller was talking about cram fish on Biddle.
Oh, cram fish. Yeah. Okay, that's on the north side. The building that it is in is not a historic building. It is in a corrugated metal building. Cram fish started about 1904. And at one time, they supplied lots of major grocery store chains locally. But in recent years, they've concentrated on the fish fries. So if you go to a church fish fry just about anywhere in the St. Louis area, you will have been doing business with cram fish.
You know, you can get rich if you're supplying fish for fish fries around Easter time in St. Louis, because there sure are a lot of them. You know, is there a most important era? I mean, this may seem like a strange question, but there's been such a period of transition in this city over the 2.5 centuries. Is there a most important period, a few decades, a period that really stands apart in our history?
This city has a whole been so important in so many great stories of American history, you know, with the opening of the West and the role we played in the Civil War. We played such a tremendous role in securing the West for the Union. That's so important. The way we accepted waves of refugees from the war and then immigrants from all over Europe and built this incredible economy. One of the things that I learned so much in doing this book, though, was about our role in the 20th century and the role of our USO. And that's just, it just gives me goosebumps. And I found about – I first learned about the USO when I was in Key West, Florida, in 1987, and I'm going to see Hemingway's house. And when I signed in, the guest book is from St. Louis, they wouldn't accept money from me for the tour because, first of all, three of Hemingway's four wives were from St. Louis, okay? But the docent, who was an older gentleman – he said, you're from St. Louis. The people there were so good to me during World War II. And he talked about our USO. And that's where I first learned that there was this great reservoir of goodwill across the nation. to downtown St. Louis.
You could see how the USO would thrive here, given the hundreds of thousands of GIs who passed through Union Station on their way east and west during World War II.
Well, and when I started researching it, and I found that, I just hadn't thought about it. Jefferson Barracks and Fort Leonard were in Scott Air Force, and then that we were at such a transfer point, the numbers of soldiers coming here. We opened the USO it was dedicated the summer before Pearl Harbor. So folks here were ready for it. By Christmas of 44, we had over 3 million guests at our USO. And, the fond memories. I mean, you think of it. These poor kids, they were young boys who were taken away from their home and being sent to God knows where.
Only have about 30 seconds left. We have a caller. We can't take the call asking about how many blocks were destroyed in the fire. I think you said 15.
15 in that fire.
15. We are yet in another period of transition here in the city of St. Louis, very, very quickly. The millennials are coming in. The empty nesters are coming in. It's the start of a new era.
It is so exciting. It's as thrilling as any era in downtown.
Nene Harris, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's a wonderful book, Downtown St. Louis by Nene Harris, noted historian of neighborhoods, architecture, and all the rest of it in St. Louis. Thanks for being with us. Good luck with the book.
Thank you.
It's a lot of fun. Thanks. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay about recent events and what may be in store in 2016. Then we'll take a look at a collaboration among St. Louis musicians and a new recording of Johnny B. Goode to help fund the completion of a documentary on Chuck Berry's longtime pianist, Johnny Johnston. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.